The Wescom Conference is a biannual event that highlights the commercial real estate market in El Paso and the Southwest region through education, marketing, and networking opportunities. Disclaimer: the following episode of El Paso Primetime was recorded during the 2024 Wescom Conference. Some of the information or events mentioned during this recording might be outdated. Thank you.
This is Primetime on KTEP, a program that focuses on economic development, mobility, security, and quality of life issues in El Paso and surrounding areas.
Hello, everyone. This is Richard Dayoub. I'm your host for El Paso Primetime, and we are at the Wescom Conference being held at the Hotel Paso del Norte, and we have with us as guests the first speakers, actually, that were part of the morning's program. We have Ms. Andrea Cortinas, who is the Vice President and Chief of Staff at the University of Texas at El Paso, and Dr. John Hajimarku, who is the Dean of the Woody L. Hunt College of Business. So we thank you both for being on the show this morning, and we'd like to take just a few minutes before you get back to your day jobs and talk a little bit about, first of all, Andrea, what you shared with our audience this morning in terms of some really important information regarding the university.
Hi, Richard. Thank you so much for having us. Yes, we want to announce that the university has 25,000 students enrolled this fall. That number is up from last year. We've broken 25,000. We're very excited about that. Lots of things happening on campus. Of those 25,000, we have about 3,900 freshman students in the entering class. That is a record number for the third year in a row, and I think it shows a rebound from the pandemic, but also our continued commitment to serve the region and also to recruit from outside of the region. So it's great news to share with you today.
Thank you. And there's actually some other data that I thought some of the comments that you made with regard to our standards for making sure that we have open enrollment and all students who wish to go to the university not only can do so, but are financially able to do so, if you wouldn't touch on that.
Yes, of course.
For a moment.
Absolutely. So UTEP's longstanding commitment to open access, excellence, and impact continues, and it's embedded in everything that we do. We believe that education matters, higher education changes lives, and we have not changed who we choose to admit at the university. But if a student wants to come and get a degree at UTEP, we want them to come. We'll work with them. We'll help open doors of opportunity, just like UTEP did for me over 25 years ago. We're continuing that today, while also maintaining one of the lowest tuitions available for an R1 research university in the country. It's one of the lowest. I don't have the numbers memorized, but our average tuition and fees for full-time enrollment last year were about $9,000, and many of our students receive some form of Pell Grant or other award, not a loan, and the average out-of-pocket for those students was around $968 for the year. That is a tremendous value for the degree of education that you're getting at UTEP. It's not just any education. It's an excellent education with great opportunities for research and study and fields from anywhere from cyber to advanced manufacturing to aerospace to biology and cancer research. Our students are just doing fantastic work with our great faculty. We're so fortunate to have our faculty. And so we're just excited for another year of great things happening at UTEP with our faculty and our students.
Well, thank you. And I would offer this as sort of background, but many years ago, Dr. Natalicio and I were in Austin to meet with the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board Commissioner, who basically told us becoming an R1 research institution was something that we were delusional about, that there's no way we would ever achieve that level. And I would like to have him here right now so he could see all that you are accomplishing at the university. So we thank you for your hard work. Thank you for being on the show with us this morning. And again, Dr. Hajimarku, I don't want to get you too far ahead of the game because we're going to get you back on the show again. but we just recently met. So if you wouldn't mind, since this morning, there was a pretty important contribution made to the real estate program. If you wouldn't mind speaking a little bit about the minor.
Great. Thank you for allowing me to be here. I really appreciate that. So the minor got started back in 2020, spring of 2020, during the pandemic. And we have seen a tremendous interest in the minor. The growth has been unbelievable to me, which I have been trying to explain why there is so much interest, but for some reason, the minor in real estate resonates with our students. And we have put together a program that I think reflects the interest and the needs of the industry. So from that standpoint, we see a lot of our students go through the program, and then they are prepared to take jobs in the real estate industry here in El Paso and elsewhere. So we are very proud of that program. I would say the key to the success of the program is our partnerships with real estate companies and our faculty, incredible faculty. For example, Dr. Zifeng Feng is one of the top researchers in the world in real estate, but he doesn't just do research, he's very involved with our students. And that's what we do here at UTEP, that we engage our students, we take them by the hand, we guide them through, we mentor them, we coach them, and then they are very successful when they go out for their careers.
Well, thank you. Thank you both for being on the show this morning. And we're excited to share all this information with our community. I wish you guys a great day, and thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
We're back at the Westcom conference, and we are privileged to have the opportunity to visit with one of the panelists who just participated in the program to discuss manufacturing in Mexico and the partnership with the United States, and in particular El Paso. We have Mr. Alan Russell, who's chairman and CEO of Tecma Group. Tecma Group is what is known as a shelter manufacturing operation. Alan, thank you for taking a moment before you go back to your day job to join us this morning. If you wouldn't mind first talking to our audience a little bit about what that means, and then we can really focus on the area you'd like to talk about.
Thank you. A shelter manufacturing company is, it's a concept we developed 35 years ago for companies that need to get across the border into Mexico, but it's daunting, it's difficult, the culture is different, they don't know how to do it. So our technology, now we used to be a contract manufacturer where we would just produce products for you, such as a phone case or a power supply, a telephone. And we moved to the concept because companies needed help. So we developed our technology being Mexico. And our clients bring three things to the table: the equipment, the materials, and most importantly, the technology. And that allows us to be very diverse. So we have plastic extrusion, PC board, auto insertion, auto parts of everything that you can imagine for a car, from a door latch to the cruise control system, textiles, mattresses, bed frames. We have 92 operating factories in Mexico, covering about 10 million square feet of manufacturing space. So we're in a sweet spot, and we're not by ourselves. El Paso Juarez is in a sweet spot.
You're headquartered right here in El Paso.
That's right. Founded here. My co-founder was Dick Azar, which many of your listeners will remember.
Dick Shire Coors.
Absolutely. He was my partner for 15 years, mentored me, kept me out of trouble. And
not an easy task.
No, not easy, but he got me on the right path. And I stand on the shoulders of people like him. So I didn't do this by myself.
Well, we're so glad to have you on. But if you wouldn't mind just taking a moment before you leave, just to share with our audience a little bit of what you shared during the program this morning in terms of being the epicenter for the future of manufacturing and working with Mexico.
We're fortunate that, you know, El Paso's been a quiet town. You know, you got Houston that booms and Dallas booms and Austin booms, and we hear all about that, and El Paso just moves along steady, which is a better format. Now, we're very popular because there's a global shift in manufacturing. Every company in the world, from Europe to China to Korea, Japan, they all are supplying and want to supply the largest market in the world, which is the United States. Because of circumstances such as COVID, the price of oil, interest rates being high, which means it takes time to get product from China, whether you're a European company or... And then there's U.S. companies that manufacture in China, the very products that we use on a day-to-day basis. Helen of Troy, one of our local companies, for instance, their hair dryers, their products are coming from China. So all of those kinds of companies are trying to figure out how to be closer to the market because it saves a lot of money. And the cost of operating in China continues to go up, and it now has crossed over to where it's about the same cost as operating in Mexico if you include the logistics time. So if you're going to come to North America to compete, you're going to take a look at Mexico. If you're going to look at Mexico, you're going to look at the border because you're going to be close to your market. You're going to look at El Paso, Juarez, because it's the center of a 2,000-mile border, and we can strike the East Coast and the West Coast from this location, distribution-wise, to all of the retailers across the country in no more than 2.5 to 3 days in a truck. Trains are even available. We're in an amazing location. There's never been an opportunity like this. It's gonna last for a couple of decades. This is not today or next year. It's right now. And if I were a young person, and I encourage all of you listening, as you know, young people, make your career here in El Paso, Juarez. Don't go anywhere. There used to be this thing we called the brain drain. You know, you'd get educated and you would leave El Paso because there was no opportunities here. This is where the opportunities are.
I agree with you.
This is where to stay.
Thank you so much for taking the time to meet with us today. Appreciate it very much. Continued success to you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Alan. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. You guys have a great day.
You bet. So we're back at the Westcom conference, and we have the unique opportunity to visit with a gentleman who is a demographer and a futurist and an author. His name is Kenneth Gronbach, and Kenneth just finished doing a very entertaining presentation to our audience. Kenneth, thanks for doing the show with us. If you could just take a couple of minutes and sort of encapsulate all the entertaining but important information that you shared with our live audience.
Well, I'll tell you this. I'm impressed with El Paso, and my forecast for El Paso is you're going to print money. And the reason you're going to print money is the number of Latinos that are here and the demise of Japan and China because of their one-child-only policy.
In terms of population?
Yeah, in terms of population. China's one-child-only policy resulted in the prevention of 500 million people. It sounds like that would a problem. It hasn't been a problem for the last 40 years, but it's a problem now because that's their future labor, people 40 and under, and they simply do not have it. So what's going to happen to China? China's economy will fail before 2030, and all the manufacturing that is in China is got to find its way someplace else. It's going to find its way to the States. It's going to find its way to Mexico because Mexico is actually absolutely perfect. Mexico has perfect demography. You have just the right amount of labor. You pay them just the right amount. So you watch what happens to manufacturing in Mexico. It's going to blossom. That's what's in the future for El Paso because El Paso's proximity to Mexico. Right. It's awesome.
And so what you're basically saying is the labor market is the critical component here. If you don't have labor force to do the work, then manufacturers are going to go where they can find a well-trained labor force that they can rely upon.
And they're going to find it in Mexico. They're also going to find it in Canada. They're also eventually going to find it in Central and South America. It's going to be incredible. The Americas are going to benefit from what's happening in Asia. The population in Asia is in deep trouble because they have been practicing this reduction in fertility for 40 years. And I'm talking about across the board. I'm talking about Southeast Asia, Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam, countries like Korea. Korea is not having kids. They've just stopped. It's a problem, but it's not our problem because I believe that the Americas can sustain what is going to happen population-wise, and the reason they can is Latinos. Latinos are critical to this entire factor.
And that's the center of the universe for us. Yeah. So that's all good news. Before you leave, and I want to thank you again for taking a minute out of your schedule, if you could just share with our audience very briefly your background, which I found very interesting.
Okay, I was in marketing, and one of the things that you recognize in marketing is you absolutely, positively must understand the customers that you're appealing to. If your customer base is getting bigger, you have opportunity. If your customer base is getting smaller, you got to get out of the business. So we saw that coming, and that's how I got into demography. We discovered that in the United States, the population born 1965 to 1984 was diminutive. It's called Generation X. And Generation X did not have the critical mass to buy the stuff that the baby boomers had bought when they were that age. So what happened was the fact that Generation X was not a proper labor force, it sucked in Mexicans like you cannot believe, and they're the best immigrants we've ever had.
Well, thank you for sharing all this information with us, and thank you for being on the show. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
I really enjoyed your presentation this morning, and it was clear the entire audience did as well. So thank you, sir.
Can I tell them how to find me?
Sure.
Okay, all you have to do is go to Google and put in Ken Demographer. That's all you need.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. Take care.
Thank you, sir, very much. It's a little quieter and easier now without people standing right next to us.
Yeah.
Just jabbering away for like during early interviews. We're back at the Westcom conference, and we have with us today the keynote speaker for the Westcom conference, Chris Powers, who's CEO of Fort, a commercial development company based in Fort Worth,
yep,
Texas, but a native El Pasoan and family friend.
Yes.
And so we're great to have you here, Chris. Thanks for taking the time out of your crazy schedule, not to mention the time you need to spend with your family,
yep,
to do this with us. So without further ado, if you wouldn't mind, rather than going into the elaborate details of commercial development, I think this 13 characteristics that you shared,
yeah,
with our audience would be a great piece to share with them now.
And I'll give you, I'll do my best to give you a good summary of it. So it's an honor to be here. I love El Paso. I'm a third generation. So being here was huge. And they asked me they said, you're going to be the keynote speaker. And I said, cool, what should I talk about? And they said, whatever you want. And so I thought, all right, I'm going to give 13 observations that I've had throughout my career that I picked up on from witnessing other people that have been successful. And so I'll run through them. How about that?
Please.
So the first was, I titled it Starting in Momentum. And the gist of that was 92% of people don't actually ever start on it, on their great ideas. And you constantly meet people that are talking about something that they want to do, and then you follow up with them and they never do it. For one reason or another, the fear of failure, they'll come up with reasons why it won't work, it's too expensive, it's this, this, and this. But if you look at the people that are successful, whether it's athletes or business people or really anybody, one thing they all had in common was they were willing to start. We often see, you know, you look at a company like maybe Apple, you see them building iPhones and doing all this cool stuff. They look really successful, but if you looked at how they started and the process to get there, it's probably very messy. If they had known all the stuff they would have gone through, maybe they wouldn't have started. But it's just having that desire to start. The second I titled, Diamonds Are Forever and So Is Your Basis. And the gist was that there's a lot of different things you can do in real estate to create value. And you can finance things differently, you can lease differently, you can have better cost on certain things, all these things. But the one thing you can't change, no matter how smart you are, is the basis that you pay for something. If you buy a house for $1 million, for the rest of time you paid $1 million. You can't make it 700,000, you can't make it 600,000, it's $1 million. And your basis often dictates the decisions that you have to make. And I gave an example that if you paid $1 for this beautiful hotel, you wouldn't have to do a whole lot right to make money on it. But if you paid $1 billion for this hotel, you'd have to run it like a pretty tight ship if you wanted to make any money. And so the whole gist was focused on your basis. The third was treating your operating company like a business. I won't go too deep on this, but it was inspiring people that, especially in the deal business, to not just focus on doing deals, but build a company and a culture that can facilitate the operations of owning those deals for long periods of time. The headline usually that you read in the paper is so-and-so bought X deal. What they don't talk about is so-and-so operated X deal for 10 years after buying it. And the best companies that I've seen have built great operations. The fourth was success in most things is doing boring things consistently over time. I think I gave a quote by Novak Djokovic, the most winning tennis player of all time. And what he said was, he was asked, why have you been so good for so long? And he said, because I love hitting the ball. It wasn't an elaborate answer. There was no tricks. There was no gimmicks. It was a simple love of hitting the ball every day for his whole life. And so I related that to business by saying, if you often look at the most successful people, the most successful companies, the results they have are exciting, but the day-by-day job, little tasks that are done, the thousands of things that happen every day, any one of those is not exciting in and of itself, but doing them really well every day, day after day after day, are what create the results that we all get so excited about. The fifth was the power of focus. And I use the analogy by Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods got really good at golf at a really early age. And rather than saying, well, I'm good at golf, now I'm going to play football and baseball and tennis and everything else, he just said, no, I'm just going to keep playing golf and get better at that thing. And I relayed that to business by saying, if you look at the greatest businesses in the world, they're really, really focused. And I related that to my career by saying, my business really took off when we decided to focus on one asset class in one market. And we got so good at it that then we could move to another market. But if we had always done lots of different deals and been scattered all over the place, we would have worked really hard, but with no focus, we wouldn't have made the progress. So focus helps you make progress. The sixth was real estate is a byproduct of human demand. And I just gave people four pictures, an industrial building, a picture of a house by the water, a shopping mall, and an office building. And I just said, if you knew nothing about real estate, but you just had to predict how would humans interact with this real estate, you could probably build a general thesis for what to invest in. And I won't go through all four, but if you picked industrial and you said, well, I think generally people are going to keep manufacturing things. Okay, that's good. People are going to keep storing things. That's good. People are going to keep distributing things. That's good. Probably pretty good chance that industrial is going to still be needed 20 years from now. Probably something good to invest in. But then I took the shopping mall example. The highest activity of shopping mall investing actually took place right up until the internet was coming. And so if I'd given this presentation 20 years ago, and I would have said, you should invest in shopping malls, what I would have missed was that human behavior was about to change so radically we could have never predicted that most people would be ordering things online and shopping malls would no longer become useful. So it's just a reminder, if you want to get good at real estate investing, one of the simplest principles you can learn is, how are humans going to interact with this real estate? Then I put focus on what you control. Focus on what you can control. The most successful people that I've watched over time focus on things they can actually control the outcome of. They don't focus on the market and things that they actually can't really control. And unsuccessful people tend to let things they can't control impact them deeply. It changes their behavior. Successful people let the things they can control change their behavior. I can't change interest rates tomorrow. I can't change the market tomorrow, but I can control how I treat people, how I operate my business, all of those things. So it was just a reminder to people that focus on what you can control, not what you can't. I then gave a funny story about problems are relative to the biggest problem you've had and so are wins. And the real gist of that was, that every problem that I've had earlier in my career where I thought the world was ending and there's no bigger problem in the world, sitting here 20 years later, I wish I had that problem today. And so it's just giving people a way to rationalize what they're dealing with is this really as big of a deal? In 5, 10, 20 years, am I going to think this is as big of a deal? And the answer is probably no. Same thing with your victories. We tend to think that the victory we just had is the biggest victory we've ever had. And again, every time I've thought I hit the biggest victory I've ever had, there was something bigger down the road. And so I wasn't so anchored into, you know, something that happened early in my career. The ninth was incentives rule the world. Incentives are the motivations or rewards that drive decisions and behaviors in every aspect of life. Everything a human does day by day, second by second of every day is driven by something they're incentivized by. The 10th was the power of long-term thinking and compounding. And what I wanted to get across to the audience was the longer your time horizon is to make decisions or to do things, the more flexibility, the more that can go wrong and you still be okay. And the analogy I used was, if you were to buy a property, and we're at a real estate conference, so everything was back to property, and I said, you have to make a profit in 1 year on it. A lot would have to go right in that year. You'd have to hope the market didn't tank. a lot of things you can't control would come into impact, and you may or may not do it. But if you said, I have 20 years to make this successful, the range of outcomes and the decisions you could make and the way you would invest money would just change drastically. You'd have a much better chance of being successful, and the effort that you would put into the deal later on in your career, you'd be getting more upside for less work the longer you own the deal. The 11th was do the right thing. I think most people on this planet want to do the right thing. The problem is it's not always easy to do the right thing, and the world we live in, for better or worse, presents us opportunities every day to either A, do the wrong thing, or kind of do the thing that's a gray area. It's not wrong, but it's not right. And I use an example of a email that my dad sent to me on doing the right thing. And again, I tied it back to the most successful people that I have witnessed in life, in relationships, in all of those things, tend to do the right thing. Careers are very long, and I used a quote by Warren Buffett that said, it takes 20 years to build your reputation, it takes 5 minutes to kill it. Warren also says something to the degree of, if what you're doing right now you wouldn't want on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, don't do it. Sounds simple, harder to do. The 12th was relationships are greater than everything else, and I basically just tied it down to this. We do business with people we like, and we try and avoid doing business with people we don't like. It's the same thing with friendships. It's the same thing with relationships. We tend to gravitate towards people we like, and so try and be somebody that people likes, and you'll do better. It's free to be likable. It's a decision that you make. The 13th, and I left everybody on this, was let it go. We're all in the business of making money and having success. And I made a prediction that the biggest killer of success and loss of money are people's unwillingness to say I'm sorry and forgive people. Grudges are built, and business doesn't happen because people would rather anchor into their ego and their desire to be right than just let it go and move on. And successful people have observed careers are really long. If I'm going to get in a fight with you today, I'm probably going to have to deal with you 30 times throughout my career. Best thing I could do today is say, hey, let's have a drink, let's go have a meal, let's bury the hatchet and move on. And so I left everybody on a note was, and I'll leave your listeners with this challenge. If you're listening to this and you probably have a relationship in your life, maybe it's in business, maybe it's at home, maybe it's with a friendship, forgive somebody. Go say you're sorry. It's free. You'll feel really relieved. Somebody once told me that forgiveness is releasing a prisoner, and that prisoner is you. And so I think if we want to get back to making a lot of money and doing really well, one free way to do it is go say you're sorry to whoever you need to say you're sorry to.
That's a great way to end this conversation. You captivated the audience today, I will tell you, especially when you got to the piece where you read your dad's email. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. It is a true pleasure.
El Paso Primetime is a production of KTEP. Views expressed by the host and guest don't necessarily reflect those of KTEP. For inquiries about our public affairs programming, email ktep@utep.edu. Richard Dayoub appears courtesy of Thunderbird Consulting. The producer and editor is Daisy Morales. The show is recorded at the Communication Department at the University of Texas at El Paso. To learn more about the program or to listen to past episodes, visit ktep.org.